It's Sal Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
Sal
Capaccio.
On WGR.
Sal Capaccio joining us on the Western Hotline. Happy Friday, TGIF. Football Friday brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way.
TGIFF.
It's Football Friday.
Yeah.
You know what they say, Joe? You can't listen all day unless you start early in the morning. So if you're with us, welcome. Yeah. Gotta start early if you want to listen all day. Sal Capaccio joins us on the Western Hotline. Good morning, Sal.
Good morning. Starts with one step. That's all it's got to take.
That's
right. Then you go from there.
Were you playing against or did you have Ja'Marr Chase in lineups? I feel like we have to be kind to people today that are waking up and seeing that Ja'Marr Chase destroyed their fantasy week.
Neither, thankfully. I checked afterwards and I saw, that dude had 55 points. He had Ja'Marr Chase. And then the guy he played had 53 because he had Lamar and Mark Andrews. I'm like, whoa. Yeah. So already we got a barn burner going on, but I got a couple different leagues, and I did not have Ja'Marr in either. I had Derrick Henry in one and went against Derrick Henry in the other. So he didn't have a great day, at like 18 points. So
yeah,
I'm kind of happy about one, but not happy about the other. That's the way it goes in fantasy football.
Yeah, you got Henry there on the touchdown after Lamar.
Mm-hmm.
That might have been, of all the incredible plays in that game, we just watched it again up here, like that might have been the most incredible one for me, just how Lamar is able to toe-tap the sideline patiently all the way up to the one. But he got to the one, so if you're a Henry owner, you got the touchdown. But there were a lot of big plays last night.
I woke up this morning even thinking, boy, if I'm a Bengals fan, how excruciating was last night? I mean, all of the different ways that they found to lose. You think about not tackling Lamar, not tackling Wallace. Oh my
right.
gosh,
that one, how that do you one let worse. Him
yeah. how do you let him go down the sidelines? The missed penalties on the officials at the end of the game, the fumble that caused the turnaround. I mean, we've been down this road before. We've been down this road on Monday nights, on night games. This was a Thursday night, right? Where I thought this morning already waking up, boy, looking back at that game, if you're a Bengals fan, how excruciating a loss is that for you last night?
Yeah. What's your takeaway from a Bills fan standpoint? Like what Bills fans watching that, what do you think they come out of with that game?
It's funny. I actually did a poll yesterday. I want to see, did I have the, let's see if the results are here. I actually asked on Twitter yesterday, what is the preferred outcome for Bills fans for this game? I want to see. And there was a good debate going on. And most people, a lot of Bills fans said, how could you possibly want Cincinnati to win? How do you want them? You can't want them in the playoffs. But actually, Bengals' preferred outcome was Bengals 75-25%.
Yeah.
And I get it. I think the Bengals, to me, would be the preferred outcome because, look, I mean, if Baltimore had lost, you're now suddenly looking at them kind of in this bit of a schmozzle with some other teams. Now, I'm not saying they wouldn't make it, but considering some of their harder games they have left, it wouldn't be a guarantee that they're a slam dunk to make the playoffs. I think they'd still probably be right there and make it, but I get it. For Cincinnati to give them another loss, I mean, obviously, you know, they're such a talented team. You don't want to face them in the playoffs, and now that they have another loss, that hurts their chances a lot. But honestly, guys, there just doesn't look like there's many teams. I'll give you one. Yeah, I saw a Jets, you know, Boy Green. We've had Boy Green on, right? He does talk in Syracuse. You had him on a few weeks ago. He's a Jets fan. And he actually tweeted last night, and I said, oh, my God, that's right. He said something like, if the Bills beat the Colts and the Jets win, the Jets are in the 8th seed. That's how bad the AFC is right now, guys.
That's
where all these teams are sitting.
Right. Right now, the season ended today, would be Denver. Like, Denver, Indy.
Yes.
That's why yesterday, like, to me, it was a good debate, and why I actually even ended up like, okay, I think I might rather have Baltimore here. So, like, Cincinnati and how much dangerous, I think more dangerous they are than those other teams we just mentioned. They have losses this year to Kansas City by one and Baltimore by one and by three. Like, they are, we saw them last night, they are capable of going toe-to-toe with anybody in the league. I would think the Bills as well. I don't know how complete they are. I mean, as you've seen in two Raven games so far, it's mostly just Burrow and Chase, right? Like, their whole team almost right now, it seems to be just Burrow and Chase is the whole thing keeping it afloat.
Yeah, and listen, last night, I mean, I thought, oh my God, how are the Bengals, how is this Bengals defense doing what they're doing to the Ravens offense? And then obviously everything turned, right? Because the Bengals defense has not been very good this year. And then last night, they suddenly turned it on, and now here comes the Bengals defense under Lou Amarillo and Anarumo that we've seen over the last few years. But again, last night, at the end of the day, it wasn't good enough. You look at the Bengals defense this year, I mean, they've given up, let's see, 35, 24, 37, 41, 38.
Yeah.
I just, they have to kind of win with those shootout games. And then next week, they go to the Chargers, the Bengals. And that's suddenly becoming, the Chargers are live, right? I mean, the Chargers are an interesting team in all this mess, too, because they actually have a doable schedule outside of a few games here, and they have the number one defense in the league as far as points allowed.
So, Capaccio joining us on the Wester Hotline here on a Football Friday. All right, so let's dig into the Bills and the Colts. And in this matchup, you know, I don't know if anyone's going to call it a trap game. The injuries will have people maybe a little bit nervous because the Bills are dealing with some. So let's get to the Barnes Firm Injury Report brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Injured for help, call 1-800-8-MILLION. Is there good news? Good news, bad news? It seems like, you know, there's cause for concern.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, Keon Coleman has not practiced for two straight days, and it just doesn't appear after what Sean McDermott said about how it could be something that lingers over a week, even though he wasn't going to officially rule him out earlier in the week. It's really trending towards him not playing on Sunday. And obviously, you know, you can deal with bringing some guys in and out, but now you're dealing with him and Amari Cooper, possibly, who Amari Cooper had a pretty good... It looked like a cast on his hand that he's dealing with there. And that could be, you know, and obviously he's practicing, but he's not catching passes from when we're out there from Josh Allen in the media portion of the practice. And then he's listed as limited. So you wonder where he is. It's nice that he's limited again this week after being limited last week, even though he didn't play. But he was limited last week and he didn't play. So what are you looking at now with Amari Cooper and Keon Coleman if they're both down? And then you get Mac Hollins, who was wearing a red non-contact jersey. He was full in the estimated report on Wednesday. Then he goes to limited on Thursday, and you're like, oh my gosh, did something happen? You hope not. Now, I would also say it could also be that they're laying off him a little bit because they have injuries at other guys at the same position. So you want to make sure that, you know, you're not doing anything to get him, you know, any sort of more injured, I guess. And then Curtis Samuel's also dealing with an injury. This wide receiver group is very banged up. The good news and optimistic news is they haven't made a roster move this week. They did yesterday by releasing Zion Logue, but there's no wide receiver roster move that they've made. So if you want to read into that, it doesn't feel like they're doing something to have to kind of panic on it, right?
Yeah.
You do have four players on the practice squad you can elevate. So let's see where it goes today. Sean McDermott joins the Extra Point Show at 10:45 to let us know a little bit more.
One thing about the wide receivers in the practice squad room, so Joe and I talked about this, is there a different hierarchy of guys you would call up if you planned on throwing to one of them? I mean, Jalen Virgil's been up a couple games, and it's not like they're going to throw to him. If they think there is a target vacuum, is that more of a Shavers spot possibly? He was up for the Houston game, is that right? So I just wonder how you look at that. It was Deion Kane and Ham, like, just it's a bit of a schmozzle there. There's names, and I just wonder if there's a different set of call-up rules effectively within the team.
It's always been a mystery to me because whenever I think that they have a guy that might replace another guy because of his body type, because of his style, not necessarily. And it's also interesting, they've only used, here's what they've done. I actually tweeted out yesterday, people can see, I went through all the elevations they've had this year. Who's been elevated how many times? Each player gets three around the roster. They've elevated Jalen Virgil twice and Tyrell Shavers once. That's it. So now they still have two left for Tyrell Shavers. They still have one left for Jalen Virgil. You still haven't elevated Deion Kane at all or KJ Hamler at all. To answer your question, Jeremy, I think it's just about game plan. And, you know, the organization likes to kind of reward these guys with, hey, you want to play? You want to be up? Show us what you got this week. Do your job. Show us that you're dialed in and you're making plays in practice. And, you know, they go from there. So I wouldn't doubt that there's something along those lines with it. Jalen Virgil's interesting. He's been up a couple weeks, hardly plays, but he gets in right away. I think he was in the second play of the game 2 weeks in a row. And then he goes in motion. And you wonder, is that something they're setting up for later? How he's been up now 2 weeks in a row. Do they like what they see? So you bring him up. I don't think it comes down to necessarily targets and volume. It might come down to game plan and what we think fits against this particular team and maybe a play or two that they have in the playbook designed for that player as the game goes on if it gets to that point.
I wonder how impactful this is too to like their screen game, Sal, because those Shakir screens work so well. And when you just watch the plays, and like when we watch the plays, your eyes go to Shakir and what's happening with the ball. But those screens work. There was a play last night where a Zay Flowers screen got blown up for like minus 6 yards because Rashad Bateman just completely whiffed on a block.
Yep.
And that Hollins comes to mind as someone who's very good at that. But Coleman, too. And Cooper is a bigger body that we saw a couple times in this area. So I wonder if that thought process comes into it, too. Like, their screens are working, and who's going to give them their best opportunity to get Shakir into open space, if you will.
Yeah, and I think the bigger picture is, you're right, Joe, that play specifically, but just blocking, it's becoming a big part. It's a big part of what the Bills do at wide receiver. We know that, and we can, you know, kind of snicker at it a little bit and like, blocking, wide receiver, come on, throw to these guys. That's right, but look at the style of offense they're playing. It's a big part of what they do. It's a big reason why Josh Allen only has 2 interceptions. The depth of target isn't that far down the field. Blocking's a big piece of it. We've seen blocking really help in the screen game, as you said, but also in the run game. And this is a team, the Colts, that is not a really great run defense statistically. Depends on what analytics and metrics you want to look at. They've had some big games against them running the football. So let's take everything into account we just said, guys, which is all these wide receiver injuries and not making roster moves. This could just be a game where, you know, the Bills are, okay, we're going to go and run it 35 times with James Cook and Ray Davis, and we're going to win the game that way, and we'll get on to next week. Like, I would not be surprised if that's the case.
Sal Capaccio joining us on the Western Hotline ahead of Bills-Colts. New defensive tackles, you know, how active we expect them to be, how quickly they'll be incorporated. Jordan Phillips, Quentin Jefferson both join this team that is looking for, I don't know, Sal, like, there are conflicting numbers on their run defense and whether or not they're good or bad against the run. Taron Johnson did say in postgame last week that they invite teams to run. So
yes,
it's always a little bit of a cat and mouse, or however you want to say it here, but what do you expect from the two signings that they've made to the defensive tackles, Jefferson, Phillips, and they still have an open roster spot as well?
They do. I'll get to that in a minute. I think we really should talk about that because it's really interesting. I mean, guys, I think that Phillips and Jefferson are both in play for this week. I absolutely could see them playing this week. They're down to 5 defensive tackles because of the release of Zion Logue, which we'll talk about in a second, but They have 5 active defensive tackles. They have 2 on the practice squad, Ilianku and Branson Dean. Ilianku was very good last week, by the way, against the Miami Dolphins. Like, I mean, he made a couple of nice plays that I don't know if other defensive tackles make. And in the run game, yeah, the Bills got run on a little bit, but he actually was a guy that helped out in that regard. So they have options here at defensive tackle, and they're going against Jonathan Taylor. We know what happened a few years ago when Jonathan Taylor played against a Sean McDermott defense and the Buffalo Bills defense. I don't think that that has to have anything to do with this week. It does not at all. But it does show that, you know, he's a really good running back, and this style of defense, you know, you better be better this time around at tackling him. If you talk to people in Indianapolis and you read them, they're all saying, why are you not giving the ball to Jonathan Taylor? He had 13 carries last week, but he's averaging 4.8 yards a carry. So you wonder there as well, you know, how much that plays into it, like what they want to do game plan wise. I'm guessing 5 defensive tackles could be up. Why not? I mean, you're going with a rotation here, and you have to stop a team that's going to probably want to run the ball against you. So Oliver, Jones, Johnson, and I think Phillips and Jefferson both have a true chance to be, you know, players this week on the roster. The other reason could be, too, because if you have to elevate a receiver, now you have 5 active defensive tackles. You don't have to elevate one, right? You sign 2 to the active roster. So now they're all there. You don't have to elevate somebody. You can elevate from another position now, you know, because now it becomes a numbers game and a roster game. As far as the open roster spot. So yeah, yesterday, very interesting move. They released defensive tackle Zion Logue. Now I will say it could be very simple here, guys. It could be, listen, we don't need 6 defensive tackles on the active roster. This guy, we got him from the practice squad. It was nice to have him on the team as a rotational piece, but we're going to let him go and kind of find another spot. And maybe we even bring him back to the practice squad. It could be that simple, right? But the fact is, you don't have to do that. You can have 53 guys, and they released him. I have a lot of people wondering, does that mean they're bringing in player A, B, or C? Who are A, B, and C? First of all, let's take them one at a time. It's not for Matt Milano, for anybody. Matt Milano is going to have his practice window open first. That hasn't even happened, and they don't need to put him on the 53-man roster to do that. So that's out of the question. They didn't release a player yesterday to make room for Matt Milano. Number two, could it be for Micah Hyde? Sure, I guess, in the long term, but I don't think you're releasing a player on Wednesday of a game day week and then bringing Micah Hyde, who hasn't played all year and was, you know, not saying sitting on his couch eating potato chips. I'm sure he's in good shape, but you're not bringing him in on the active roster on a Thursday or Friday of a game week. It just would be weird. But maybe, I mean, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility he joins this team. I'm not predicting it one way or the other, but sure, that could happen. But I don't see how this particular move at this time would do that. And then last one was the Ravens had released Yannick Ngakoue yesterday, and then the Bills had released or the day before, maybe it was. Either way, he had to go through waivers.
Yeah, it was.
Go ahead, Joe.
They purposely waived Ngakoue yesterday and not before the deadline, because I read if they did it before the deadline, he would have been free to sign with any other team.
Correct.
Versus yesterday, he has to go through waivers, and if he clears, they want him back on the practice squad.
That's exactly right. So that's how it works, Joe. As you know, and in case people don't, if you've been in the league 4 years and you get released, you're a free agent. But once the trade deadline passes, everyone is subject to waivers once they get released. It doesn't matter if you've been in the league 20 years. You know, it doesn't matter. You have to. So that's exactly why they did that. So could that be it? I don't know. It's an interesting move for me to get down to 52. It really could be that simple as, look, we have numbers here. We're practicing. We don't need it. At the time, it would be, what, 9 defensive tackles, counting the practice squad, taking reps away from each other. So let's just move on here and keep our options open as we go forward.
But do you know how that works transactionally? Like, if you are a team that wants to, someone gets put on waivers, and you decide, okay, we want to put a claim in on him, do you have to have that roster spot available when you claim him, or can you do that and then after the fact say, okay, well, now we're going to release someone because we got him?
You can release after you are awarded him.
Okay.
Because here's the reason, Joe. Like, if 10 teams put a claim in, you don't expect 10 teams to have to make roster moves just to do that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Only the team that gets awarded the player then has to make a roster move. They get a little bit of a, okay, you're getting him awarded. Before we put him on your roster, who are you releasing to do that? So that's how that would work. And that's a great point you just made, which is, okay, then if that's the case, why release a guy before being awarded another player, right?
Right, you wouldn't have to, right?
Right, exactly. So, I don't want to read too much into it other than it probably maybe just was, hey, thanks a lot, and we're going to give you a chance because you're going to be buried here in our rotation, and, you know, if you can clear waivers, we'd like to have you maybe back in the practice squad or whatever, you know, and he gets a chance to go elsewhere.
Is that still a position you think they're looking for more? Or maybe if that could even be internal. But as you've pointed out, like, Greg Rousseau and A.J. Epenesa are playing more snaps than really any defensive end has under Sean McDermott, and that's been by circumstance, and they are, you know, hopefully going to get healthy by the end of the year with Smoot. Is it worth noting at all, or is it interesting at all to you that Rousseau and Epenesa, their workload is higher than normal guys at that position?
It's interesting, but I also think that you're looking at Von Miller, who is older. He obviously had the suspension. I wonder how that looks going forward. I imagine they're going to have some load management as you go on the season here with Von Miller. I know that the load management's already come with the 4 games he was out, but he is still at his age. You want him, and look where you are in your standings. You know, you want Von Miller ready to go in the playoffs and being the closer, right? So I think that's part of it. You know, Javon Solomon, I think you like some flashes from him here or there, Joe, but it's not a guy that you want to rely on consistently to be out there. So I don't know. I would say I don't think it's necessarily a position you're looking to add to, but I think you have to kind of massage how you have the rotation going forward.
Sal Capaccio joining us on the Western Hotline ahead of Bills Colts. So Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show today, 10:00. Schedule for that?
Yeah, we're gonna have Sean McDermott at 10:45 a.m. today.
All right.
So he'll have our first injury update, our injury update for Friday. If he declares anybody out at that time, we'll see. We'll also get an update on who's, you know, going to be at practice today doing anything. On Keon Coleman, real quick, though, guys, it is noteworthy. And, you know, I wrote about this in that video. He didn't have anything on his wrist. No wrap, no brace. I mean, that's super encouraging, right? So hopefully, even if it's going to be, you know, out this week, you hope that, okay, avoided like super disaster here with him, because that was interesting to me that he had nothing on there, but he didn't really do any work. He was off to the side working with trainers. And for the Colts, by the way, Michael Pittman Jr., he has not practiced 2 days in a row. He's got a back injury and a finger injury. He's the only player on their active roster who has not practiced yet this week, so they might be without their wide receiver. Brian Colzio is going to join me at 11. Paul's going to be flying back from New York, so unfortunately he can't join me. But we got to talk Sabres, right? Really nice win last night. So I asked Brian, and he's nice enough to take a little time out of his day. He's going to join me at 11. And then I know the Bills are playing in a dome this weekend, but Pat Hammer at 11:30, because, hey, Indy's a great city. I know I've talked to people that are going there to visit, and we want to know what the weather's going to be like for people going to Indy this weekend if you're going to be watching the Bills. I think the dome will be closed, guys, because it's supposed to rain on Sunday, but I have not had official word on that.
I was going to say, isn't it?
Does that one open?
I didn't realize it opened. Or they open it.
You can do that. Yep. I know, because they never do it, right? I'm drawing a blank on the darn name of it. Lucas Oil. Right? Lucas Oil Stadium. Hold on. Let me just make sure. I know, right? It is a multi-purpose stadium, blah blah blah. And yeah, because when I read, there are definitely, it's been open before. Yes. In fact, I know for sure, because Pat McAfee was talking with Josh yesterday about the dome being open or closed. Isn't that funny? We never think about this one being open at all.
I've never thought about that one being able, maybe it's the shape of it.
I thought it was like a field house.
It looks like a barn. Yeah.
The stadium features a retractable roof and a large retractable window on one end, allowing the Colts play both indoors and outdoors.
Yeah. I didn't know that there's not rules on this, by the way. Did you guys see what happened in Arizona last week on Sunday? How they had the roof.
They had to close it when it started raining?
Yeah, it started pouring. And like, it was only on the field because they had the stadium open, because probably thinking, when's it going to rain in Phoenix? It starts pouring while the Bears are on offense. So the Cardinals start closing the roof, but it takes 10 minutes to close the roof. So the Bears had to play a drive in the pouring rain on offense, and by the time the Cardinals were on offense, then the roof was closed, and they were dry.
That's funny. It takes a while to close those things, too, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
That's why, it took a while.
Thanks, Sal.
You got it, guys.
Be listening with Sal at 10 o'clock and Sean McDermott at 10:45. Time for a break. We'll be back in a snap, brought to you by Snapdragon Apples, the official apple of the Buffalo Bills. Jeremy and Joe on a football Friday. Give us a ring, 803-0550. It's almost time to remember some Colts. I'm really happy with the guy.
I don't think I'm going to beat the guy you got.
I already told him, tip of my tongue. He's really happy about this one. Great player. We'll remember some Colts along the way. Fun franchise to do it with. Jeremy and Joe on Football Friday.
Down 4-0. Facing more pressure here from Malenstein. Sends it across. Scores! Lafferty! And the Sabres go back-to-back-to-back here quickly in New York and lead it 5-0 with 6:09 to go in the second period.
That's Beck Danglestein to you.
Wow. Man, he chose the wrong type of path as a player.
One of the moments of the game brought to you by Firth Jewelers. For all the moments in your life, go forth to Firth. You know, can I tell you the best play in this entire game?
The best play in the whole game.
Sabres won 6-1. They had a goal by Paterka. JJ the Turkey was disallowed for offside. The kind of goal that, of course, offside challenges were meant to get out of the game, where, you know, you've sustained offensive zone possession and you roof it from the red line. You know, that's got to get out of the game. It's offside. Anyway, the best play of the game. You're not going to get it because it's not going to be in any highlight reel.
It's Peyton Krebs threw down a guy 5 inches taller than him somehow.
That's a good answer. The Sabres are at their best when Krebs is going a little crazy, which he does from time to time.
He last night was one of the, they were like consumed with getting after Peyton Krebs for 30 minutes of that game last night. Yeah.
There's a play, and I will retweet it here in a moment. Tage
is on fire. He's on 52 goal pace.
Tage is on fire.
53 goal pace.
The best news about the Sabres is that Tage is back to being
Tage.
Yeah.
Like elite Tage.
Yes. Not last year's Tage where is there a wrist injury that's a... No.
No, like he's in the Hart Trophy conversation,
right.
Tage.
Absolutely smoking guys. There's a play and someone grabbed it and posted it. Okay. Second half of the clip. It's 5-0.
Okay.
And there's a... It's the highlight of the Tage goal. But He collects a pass with his skate in the neutral zone up to his stick in a play that did not result in a goal. That's one of the sickest plays I've ever seen.
Okay.
Watching real time, like,
did he just do that?
He just, it was unbelievable what he did. So,
did you retweet this video?
I'm looking for it.
Okay.
Someone put it out there. But he collected a pass with his skate to his stick that was bonkers. And the, you know, the confidence you're playing with there, all that, it's just, I think I've got it here. Yep, there it is. Okay, I'll retweet. So there's a package right here. It's Fun Tage Thompson is back. The first one is the dangle goal, and then the second one is the skate kicked through, kicks the puck,
yeah.
His trail leg. Soccer players would be proud.
Oh, I know the move. I know the type of move you're talking about. I can see it in my head.
Yeah,
I didn't see. I don't remember seeing it last night, but I know the move you're talking about.
You know, you
kick it up with your back. It's like almost like a, like it's a Messi does this a lot. Like the heel back through on the left, kind of.
Yeah, his right skate heel plays it through on his left side to his stick, and it's just stupid.
Yeah,
it's super incredible. It's super impressive. And then he dangles a guy and rips a shot, and you know it's 5-0 at that point.
Yep.
Hey, yeah, they won.
There it is. Holy cow!
They won. Good for them.
That's because that man, that pass he catches is so far behind him.
Yeah, and he turns it into a scoring chance.
Right. Yeah, they looked. Hey, two games in a row where they've scored 5+. Right.
Yep.
11 goals. They really should have had 7 last night because of the offside thing.
And against teams that are not dog teams. I mean, Ottawa is having a decent year before the Sabres send them to that loss. They've lost 2 in a row.
2 really good goaltenders.
Yep.
Right. Allmark and Shesterkin. They didn't get backups in those games.
We're still at a spot where the Atlantic is not very strong after Florida. The Leafs have 16 points in 14 games. The Sabres have 13. The Lightning have 15.
Okay. Where's Boston?
Boston is 15-15. Boston's on, like, all these teams that are below a 90-point pace in the Atlantic, you wonder if it's the kind of year where a low number gets in. Right now, the last wild card team pace is like 82 points.
Yeah.
It's so low. So you might have a year where you don't even really have to be that good. You just have to be better than these teams.
It's like hang around at the beginning while everyone is smashed together in the standings, and then someone's going to emerge. Right now, the difference between Toronto at number 2 in the Atlantic Division and the last place team in the whole conference is only 6 points. Only 6 points. I mean, at this point, maybe 6 is a lot. But 4 points between them in Ottawa. Second and seventh. There's a second and seventh in the Atlantic is the difference of 4 points.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Hang around. Well, I guess they've done that. Now needs to be the win streak, right? Some teams are going to start emerging. Maybe Boston gets to get it together. Maybe Ottawa goes on a run. Somebody's going on a run. I don't think that's going to hold, that 84 points is going to be third in the Atlantic. Somebody's going to get it together. So you just got to have that be you.
In Calgary, in town tomorrow for a 1 o'clock faceoff.
Which, hey.
They just lost to Boston last night in overtime.
Well, let's see. 1 o'clock, what would that be on their body clocks?
Like,
what are they used to?
11, 10, 11 a.m.?
No, more than that. It's like a 3, oh no, like 9 a.m. maybe? 10
a.m.? They're 2 hours behind us.
So, that's it?
Yeah, 11 a.m.
Okay, 11 a.m. All right. A little earlier for
Beat Calgary. 803-0550 and 1-888-550-2550. Bills and Colts.
You could also name some Flames, too. I feel like name some Colts would be more fun.
Yeah. Bills and Colts. Any fear, any hesitation? Listen, the injuries are to be taken seriously. Maybe it's a game where Josh ends up running a lot, where he feels like he has to. Because if the Colts can key in on, you don't have anybody on the outside, and we kind of go back in time to that life.
I don't know that they're, are they defensively capable of even exploiting that? Like, Jacksonville tried to do that.
Here's why I would say yes. Baltimore did. And Baltimore's defense is a mess.
I know.
They have a reputation for being good, but their defense is a mess, before Kyle Hamilton got hurt.
What did Jacksonville do? Didn't Jacksonville try to do the same thing? They man the Bills up all day and dare them to beat them, and they did?
Yes.
Like, and their secondary stinks. The Ravens maybe is not great either. They let up 400-plus passing yards on them yesterday. But I don't know. The Colts just don't strike any fear into me. I don't know what they do well. What are they best at? What's their best thing right now? It's not the run game is not like that great. I'm not afraid of Flacco. I'm not afraid of anything defensively from them. I'm not saying they're terrible at everything. I just don't know what are they good at? What are they great at? They're just kind of there. They're the Colts. They just kind of exist. 500. They've lost an amazing amount of games by like one score this year. Right? Every game's been by one score, hasn't it? Haven't they played like a record number of one score games this year? They don't get blown out. They don't blow anybody out. Like they're kind of meh. I'm not. Maybe this is bad. I'm not afraid of anything about the Colts this year, or about in this game. So no, I'm about as confident as I could be going into this game. I was also that confident going into the Miami game, and that came right down to the very end. So you never know. They've not had a game this year that was decided by two scores. Every single game they've played has been a one-score game. This past week, the Vikings game was 8. Everything else was 6 or less. So they do play a lot of close games. They have not got blown out. They've played some good teams. They played Houston. They've played Green Bay. That was Green Bay with Willis, though. They played Minnesota. So they don't get blown out, but I feel like this could be the first one for them.
803-0550, Flacco.
Joe Flacco. What's the last Flacco Bills game?
The one where Matt Milano folded him in half? Or was that was Mike White?
He folded Mike White in half, and then Flacco came in. No, White returned and then left again, maybe.
Okay.
Because everyone was like, wow, look at this Mike White guy coming back from that hit.
One thing about the Colts is I saw Trainwreck Sports just tweeted out a video of Allen against the Colts in the playoff game. And if you watch this Josh Allen in 2020, first off, the stands are empty, so that's different. That Josh Allen would not recognize this Josh Allen. It's wild. He is winging the ball 35 yards down the field, the Gabe Davis toe tapping on the sideline.
Yeah.
He's designed runs. I mean, we start to see some of his genius where one of the touchdowns is a pass to Dawson Knox where it looks like a busted play, and he's right at the line, and he throws it just like last week against Quentin Morris. Might as well be a carbon copy of that touchdown. That Josh Allen would not recognize this one. And it's a testament to, you know, his skill set, how the Bills have brought him along in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. By the way, Flacco's last start against the Bills was Josh Allen's first game. The Peterman game.
Yeah.
47-3. 47-3. Okay. That was Flacco's last start against the Bills. I think it will go better than that.
I hope so. 803-0550-1888-550-2550. It is Buffalo Bills Football Friday, brought to you by Salino Law. Car crash, call Salino, and by Crosby's Pizza and Subs. Start your game day the Crosby's way. All right, I got an idea, fellas. Ready? Every Thursday, we've been putting together our Thursday three-way parlay. We each pick a leg, and we see if we win. And there's really no punishment for losing. You know, we'd lose the $5 or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But if your leg hits and my leg fails, and I cost us or whatever. Last night, we only hit one of our three. A couple times, we've hit 2 out of 3. Anyway, between now and November 30th, we're going to track each of our individual records in the Thursday three-way. And the person with the worst record has to watch...
Oh, no.
Holiday touchdown, a Chiefs love story.
This is the Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift... Hallmark Christmas movie? Inspired. The characters are not named Travis Kelce.
The Hallmark Channel's Holiday Touchdown.
Yeah.
A Chiefs love story.
I'm now relinquishing my right for my pick in the
third. You don't even
want to
pick?
You have to pick.
The stakes are too high.
You have to pick.
You know what? That's fine, because I don't want to watch it either.
Well, you're leaving the door open then, because if I get above 50%, I think I'd be plus, and you would be neutral, so you would have to watch it.
That's true.
So you could finish not picking.
You could just make this a fantasy football last place punishment. I mean, it'll still be the holiday season when you finish in last.
I think we should do this. I think the loser, we're going to pick every week, and whoever comes in last is watching this movie and then reviewing it. Yes.
Oh my God.
This is happening.
The Chiefs have
this
to
be stopped.
This
is a great idea.
By the way, I feel like we have not yet been totally
overloaded with Chiefs perfect season stuff.
That's, not yet.
That starts this week. To me.
Oh, see, I was thinking it would start if they were if they beat the Bills, it would start.
That's what I mean. If they beat Denver, the week of the Bills, it'll be about can the Bills are the last team favored to beat them.
Yeah.
So I feel like it starts with if they win this week,
do they go undefeated?
So then it starts the week of that game. So
okay, I guess
Bills
right.
Chiefs by this time next week, we will be inundated with Chiefs perfect season talk. So prepare yourself.
I think you're right. That's how it's going to be framed. If they win the Bills game, do they go undefeated? Because their next, it's not going to happen when they go in to play Carolina.
No,
there will be an assumption that they're going to beat Carolina by 1,000. So
they have really soft games after the Bills. A couple of them.
Carolina. It goes Bills, then Panthers, Raiders, then Chargers.
Yeah, I mean,
going to need the Chargers, then the Browns and the Texans and the Steelers and the Broncos. Again.
So some challenges in there.
Yeah, it's not a cakewalk. I mean, they got a couple of easy games. Denver being a little, you know, sneaky okay here is the furthest I think I want to go with them. Their defense is great. Their offense is kind of lacking.
We had another game where, actually, speaking of their offense lacking, I want to ask you about Amari Cooper and put it in context with DeAndre Hopkins when we get back, because if Cooper misses another game here, you know, we're gonna be waiting on him. And I'm not quite at like honeymoon is over, but they brought him in to produce. He's got to produce once he's healthy. He did in that one game, and the second game wasn't really a factor. So we'll get to that. 803-0550, also had officiating cost the Bengals last night. You could say officiating cost the Bengals because they missed a couple calls on the two-point conversion. You should also say the Bengals were awarded a first down on 4th and 10 that they were obviously short of, and they did not stop. They did not measure. They just gave them a first down.
Yeah.
On the final drive. It was wild. If you slept through that, I don't know, you might have pulled your hair out officiating. That's how it goes. Jeremy and Joe, it is Football Friday. You can give us a call, 803-0550. What do you think? Prediction for Bills, Colts, and what you're looking for going into it. Football Friday on WGR.